Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. One of the great experiences I've had is to attend a one-room school. It can be hard, I think, if you're young, to imagine what that would be like to have all eight grades in one room. But our guest today has written a wonderful book for young children, young readers, to give them a great sense of what it was like. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Susan Apps Bodilli has been an elementary and middle school teacher for more than 20 years. She currently teaches second and third grade students, has a master's degree in curriculum and instruction from the UW-Madison, and holds a reading teacher license. And she's the author of a new book for children. It's called One Room Schools, Stories from the Days of One Room, One Teacher, and Eight Grades. And Susan, thank you for coming by today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, thanks for having me, Larry.
There are lots of questions I can ask. I'm sure there are listeners here who maybe attended a one-room school. Love to hear from you about your experiences and stories you may have heard possibly from parents or grandparents. That'd be fun, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. For those too young to remember, thanks, by the way, for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Well, sure.
Describe a one-room school for us.
Oh, one-room school was one room, obviously. There were generally seats and desks facing the front, the smallest desks in the front and the larger desks in the back, and all students, brothers and sisters together from first grade through eighth grade, all in one room together with maybe a little reading table at the front for the teacher and a teacher desk and a piano on the side. In the windows, sort of on east and west, so that you could get most light coming in on the sides, because, of course, there was no electricity and often no indoor plumbing, so there were outhouses in the schoolyard in the back.
Yeah, that's, we had that. I was at Hope School from first through the sixth grade, and then went to Cottage Grove Grade School, which was a huge grade school with a room for each grade, which was quite a big deal. And these one-room schools were pretty much all in rural areas, I would think.
In Wisconsin, at one time, there were over 6,000 one-room schools. Yep. They were generally about 4 miles apart in a community so that no student had to walk farther than 2 miles to get to school.
And their history, when did they begin? How far back do they go?
Wisconsin became a state late 1800s. So I think as soon as there were enough children in a community, then a community got together and started a one-room school. Often a farmer donated a piece of land or someone donated a corner of a property near a road so they could put up a school, and a community formed a school board and sort of set things up.
And tell us about the teachers. What were they like?
Teachers were often young, actually. They were often young. They attended normal school for 2 years and often lived with families, which when I tell my own students that today, they just sort of get really wide-eyed, because lots of teachers lived and had room and board with families and stayed with the family as part of the family, ate dinner with the family, got up early in the morning and left to go to school. So being a teacher in a one-room school was sort of an all-hands activity. They got up early, had to start the fire to get things warmed up, had to clean the room, took care of everything there. They often had a lot of extra help from the community. Often community members were paid to come in and clean up and help out at various times in the year. But the teacher was really the one that did everything in the building.
Yeah, absolutely. And compensation? They didn't get paid a lot, did they?
No. Interestingly, I have the treasurer's book, which was just an awesome, wonderful primary resource for my book. And the treasurer's book lists everything that they paid for at the Chain of Lakes School in Washera County from about 1908 until it closed in 1955. And it's really interesting to see the things that they paid for. But in about 1939, the teacher was paid, I wrote this down, not too much, about in the $30, $32 a month. Oh, and boy. When the school closed in 1955, that teacher, Faith Jinks, was paid about $210 a month.
Oh, man. That's not a whole lot of compensation. And they were expected to, as you say, they were expected to do a lot. I mean, you're teaching 8 different grades.
Right. The teachers that I interviewed did not seem to think that was a problem, though. I interviewed a really lovely woman who is in her 90s now, and she just got a big sparkle in her eye. That was one thing that I asked her, because I'm just teaching 1 or 2 grades now, obviously, and she just did not seem to think that was a problem. She was very organized. She had her list of what the classes were for the day up on the board. She had all her materials ready, and she just called up each class for their 15-minute lesson and kept things running smoothly and expected the kids to be sort of on task and where they were supposed to be when they were supposed to be there. So she seemed to have things right under control, I imagine.
I actually loved it. I remember it was so much fun, because when I was, like second grade or third grade or any of those early grades, I'd always listen to what they were talking. The older grades were getting, and I.
Right, that's exactly right. So many people have told me that when I've talked to people that have attended one room schools, that they say that that was a huge benefit of being in a one room school with all the grades, because not only were they being taught in their groups with a teacher, but when they were working at their desks, it was sort of like educational eavesdropping. They could relearn what they maybe didn't catch, because they were hearing it with the younger kids. And then when they were sitting, they could listen up a grade. They could listen to what was coming up, even the harder spelling words, harder math story problems, harder topics in geography and civics and science. And so I just talked to a gentleman last Saturday at Old World, Wisconsin, when I did a book signing, and that was the first thing he said. He thought that was the best way to learn, because it was almost getting mentored. Over the course of 8 grades, he could relearn things he didn't understand and learn new things every day.
So you put this book together, and your idea it's kind of written for young readers.
Right, right. In Wisconsin, the 4th graders in social studies study Wisconsin history. So it was at first my intention for this book to be for kids to learn how to study history and connect to real people in the past, mm-hmm. and to start thinking about how people of the past had lives that were the same or different as lives today, and sort of connect to people in everyday life, actually. Because kids usually like studying things like wars and and famous people. But this is a little different, because I have lots of stories of real people in real places in Wisconsin. So I think kids can really connect to that.
And some great photography in there, too.
The pictures are gorgeous. Yeah, the Wisconsin Historical Society Press Archives is just full of beautiful pictures of all sorts of kids lining up outside of schoolhouses, and I love looking at their clothes and their outfits and their smiles, and the pictures are wonderful.
Or the lack of smiles.
Yeah, sometimes. There you go. The pictures are wonderful.
Wanda in Crawfordville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I'm in Orfordville. Nobody knows where the Orfordville,
okay.
But I first want to say how pleased I am that another generation of apps is doing what Jerry has done so nobly.
Oh, thank you, Wanda. That's so nice.
And to place my one-room school experience, I started in grade school in 1946, just when I was 6 years old. And our school closed when I was about graduated from high school in 1958. So I finished grade school in 1954. Mm-hmm. This time of year reminds me of the Christmas program. And that's something that is controversial these days. We always had a Christmas program. And a teacher was often judged in her merit on how good a Christmas program she had. Every kid in the school participated, some with just saying little pieces, and some with doing dialogues, we called them, and they were little short one-act plays. I played piano for the Christmas program when I got to be, from 5th grade on up, maybe. And there was lots of singing. Santa Claus came. And importantly, all the neighbors, whether or not they had children in school, came down for the Christmas program. It was a big deal, and we got to go out at night. Oh, my gosh. We got a new dress. And so here we have music and drama and public speaking, as well as all the subjects. I heard you mention civics. Kids today don't know what civics is. And we had agriculture. Mm-hmm. And,
Thank you. It was wonderful.
No, go ahead, Susan.
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you to Wanda for bringing up the Christmas program memories. I just think that's great. What, did you get some apples or oranges at Christmas, Wanda?
Yes, we would get apples, and every family brought 2 dozen popcorn balls, and Santa Claus brought little bags of candy, which I'm sure the teacher provided.
Mm-hmm.
And we exchanged gifts because we had drawn names to buy a gift for one another. I think the limit was 25 cents. And we got a good education.
Thank you, Wanda. That's just great. A lot of people have that's been my question when I ask people lately is what was your favorite Christmas program memory? And I was talking to one gentleman, and he paused for a moment, and then he got a real sparkle in his eye, and he started singing I'm a Little Teapot right in the middle of the gift shop where I was signing books. And that was just so awesome because he really remembered exactly what he did, and his brothers. He had his brother's poem memorized, too. So it was just a really great evening for the whole community to come together and celebrate the children.
That was one of the great things about, well, I love the Christmas programs were, I mean, it was a big deal. And, I mean, we were taught, as Wanda said, we, you know, learning to speak in front of groups, the arts, playing, you know, being in plays. Those things are very, very important. And that's something that the one-room school provided. And I think the other thing about it, it did bring the community together. It didn't make any difference if you had children or not. You came to the Christmas program, and there was always the we had a program or a day, a picnic at the end of the school year mm-hmm. where all the families came at the end of the school
right.
year.
And a big softball game for the,
big
all the,
softball
for the dads
game.
Versus the kids.
Yep.
Right. And tables full of food. And another gentleman told me a story about having a big can of lemonade, a big milk can filled to the top with lemonade and ice cream bought by the school board in insulated coolers. And he could not stop talking about chocolate cake. When I talked to him, he just had very fond memories of chocolate cake with an inch thick chocolate frosting on the top at that picnic.
Well, I still remember Mrs. Eleanor Dahl was my teacher. She always brought a particular hot dish that had tuna fish and potato chips crushed up and peas, and I loved that. I loved
right.
that dish.
Well, it's interesting that people that I talk to, they don't just remember just the places or names. They have specific memories with how things smelled or how things
yeah.
tasted or how
yeah.
they felt when they went to one-room school.
Yeah.
And I think all of those memories really tie together. To when you start talking about it, all those memories tie together and come out as wonderful stories to share with your family.
So, thank you again, Wanda, for calling. Susan Apps Modilli, our guest today. She is the author of One Room Schools, Stories from the Days of One Room, One Teacher, Eight Grades. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the days of the one-room school, lots of them here in Wisconsin at one time, with Susan Apps Modilli, author of One Room School, Stories from the Days of One Room, One Teacher, and Eight Grades. You can join in with your questions and comments, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We had a Facebook comment from Nora and Cameron, who went to a one-room school in Burnett County. Anywhere from 16 to 22 students, some wonderful teachers, some not so great, but she managed to become an avid reader and a pretty good writer during that time. She wonders, does anyone else remember the radio shows? Professor Pops Gordon, music show, Let's Draw, Ranger Mac was another great program. And yeah, I remember as Pops Gordon. I remember as a I don't know, probably a third or fourth grader coming to the University of Wisconsin campus.
Oh, good. At the field house.
At the Stock Pavilion.
Stock Pavilion, right, right.
Yeah, it was at the Stock Pavilion, and Pops Gordon was there and led us all in song.
Yeah, the whole public radio in the one-room school is a very interesting part. I can imagine if you were in school and you waited and waited for just that time in the week to turn on the radio to listen to your favorite shows, that was pretty exciting.
We had a Facebook comment from Nathan. I'm glad to hear one-room schools is a topic on the show. I attended a one-room school in Burr Oak, Wisconsin, until it closed in 1997.
That's pretty recent, yeah.
Yeah. I was the last student to graduate. First in my class, I may add, going through first through ninth grade. Full disclosure, I was also the last in my class at the time. I was sad to see it close. I'm thankful for the unique experience of attending the same one-room school as my father and his parents.
Right. My father's attended the same school that his mother attended. So I have some pictures in the book of both my grandmother and my father with his brothers. And my mom also attended a one-room school. So it's sort of part of my family heritage, even though I grew up in the city.
And Nathan was all by himself in his class. I had two other students, Betty Leonard and Roger Korfmacher.
And in your class.
And we're the three in our class. And we had one girl come in for just like a semester. Her name was this really exotic, Dreema Vance.
Oh,
her
yes.
Name. And what a very exotic name we all thought that was.
So she came briefly and left.
Yeah, she came briefly and left. Jim in Whitefish Bay, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. You had an experience at a one-room school.
In 1944, when I was 6 1/2 and my brother was 5 1/2, we went to a one-room school in Millard in Walworth County. There was another girl. There was a girl there. So there were three of us in first grade, 15 in the school. And in second grade, we did fourth grade reading, fifth grade math, and seventh grade spelling, which didn't make the seventh graders very happy.
Larry and I were talking about how lots of people remember being able to listen to different grade level material, right?
It was
wasn't listening to us.
Oh, you were learning it. Oh, very good.
She put us in with that group of students.
Very good.
So our classes, we were put wherever we could keep up with the older kids.
Very nice. Yes.
Oh, I think there was a little of that in our school as well, or at least Mrs. Dahl provided extra materials. I remember getting extra reading materials, for example, that everybody got.
So if you were a higher level, you could move up.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Rich in Rice Lake. Hi.
Yes. I went to kind of a different one-room school than a lot of the callers have talked about. I went to Barron County Teachers College in Rice Lake.
Oh.
For 5 years, starting in 57. And we had all eight grades there. But then we also had some of the, students that were learning to be teachers that would practice teaching us.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember how many of those were in the state of Wisconsin, the teachers' college.
You know, Rich, I'm not sure how many the exact number is either, but that's a really interesting experience that you got to work at the practice teachers, which we still have today, of course. We still have, at my school, we still have practice teachers from University of Wisconsin-Madison that come in for their student teaching.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, Rich. We had a comment from Linda about Let's Draw on Facebook. Linda went to Hillside School for 4 years, remembered Professor Schwalbach of Let's Draw. He was later her favorite professor in college at UW-Baraboo. And people say, how did he teach a course on drawing on the radio?
I think it was very descriptive, and I think that he encouraged people to use their imagination and draw what they were thinking.
Yeah, I just don't remember that particular program, but it was apparently very popular. Bill in Sturgeon Bay, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is
literally hits home. I have not been able to, without the age to go to school in a one-room schoolhouse, but I had the opportunity, and I'm calling for one right now. I'm living in a one-room schoolhouse.
It was
built in 1904 and added on in 1915, and was operating until 1970.
Isn't that wonderful, Bill? Do you have any original floors or anything from the schoolhouse?
Everything looks the same, except I remodeled one part. Well, like I say, it was a one-room schoolhouse, all brick, cream city brick, built in 1904, and then it was added on. It looks exactly the same, except it was 12 years later, built by the old Belgian craftsman in southern Door County. And the stories I could tell, I'm working on, I don't know if I would want to be so bold as to call it a book, but a memoir, an essay that I'd like to get even printed just for a few people to give away. I've got more stories because it's in the little town of Carnot, which is about halfway between Sturgeon Bay and Algoma, right, almost on the Door County, Kewaunee County line. And everybody, all my friends, I've been living here since 1975 when I bought it. Everybody I know in the neighborhood either went to that school or their parents went to that school. And actually, the oldest person I know, we just buried last Monday, who was 97. She used to tell me stories about that school when she was just a young girl in the 20s, early 1920s. And it's just, the stories are just unbelievable. All these people, some people with, you know, farm children, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids in the family. Each one of them is in one grade, you know, up, you know, from first grade to eighth grade. And but everything that people talked about that I thought was just most, like I said, I've written so many stories down, taped quite a bit, because I want to do something with this at some point. The big thing that I seem to assimilate with a lot of the areas, well, not just in Wisconsin, but other areas that I've read about, is a lot of these little country schools have what they call pie suppers, where they would have box lunches. People would bring up either a pie or it'd be a pie supper, and they'd auction it off, usually in fall, maybe to sponsor their Christmas program or their band equipment. And they'd sell them, depending on the year, maybe in 1910 it went for a quarter, maybe in 1925 it went for a dollar. But
yep,
they would bring these things in, and people would auction them off. Sometimes generally it was the people, the parents or the family would get together, and they'd auction these off, and they'd, you know, you buy one from a friend, the guy's had a little crush on your girlfriend, but find out which one she bought or she made.
Yeah, you know, I can remember that we have us having that in our school as
or
well.
Or box social was called
box socials.
Yep.
And I remember you really kind of had to buy, I think the husbands really had to kind of buy the
carefully
wives.
Get a heads up on which one to buy, right? Because I think you could sit and eat it with whoever.
Yeah.
Made it then if you bought it. Bill, that's just great. You live in a one-room school, and I really do think you should write those stories down
from
everyone you talk to.
Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. And Ron in Fort Atkinson, I want to give you a chance. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Bless you, Larry, for carrying the subject. And Susan, it's nice to hear another generation of
thank you, Ron.
Book writing. This is wonderful. I went to 5 country schools. Our family moved around a lot, in fact. We had a reunion of Jefferson County schoolhouses led by Bill Ward. And this was probably about 10 years ago. And there were probably 300 of us. And the surprising thing, and you mentioned it, Susan, the teachers were there. We probably had about 9 or 10.
Isn't that great?
Showed. And what we didn't realize, and you don't when you're younger, these teachers were probably 16, 17, 18 years
right.
old when they taught us, and we just about fell on the floor. It's just like, that was a new discovery. So we appreciate the teachers all over again.
when you're a kid, you always think your teacher is ancient.
Yes, you do. And what I remember about the radio was University of the Air.
Right, yeah. Right.
That was on about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I think. It was
there were different. Fun. Yeah, there were different shows on different times weekly.
Yeah. And we also look forward to the movie man. He might have come around every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks. We can't remember when, you know, exactly. But that was always fun because, like you said, we had windows on the east side and the west side. And then we had another black shade to go over the regular shade to darken the room.
Okay.
And we were delighted. It was just like having your homemade theater.
So you had a man that came and showed movies?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
This is new. This is a new story for me.
I went to Southwest Oakland, which is probably, and I too would like to write a book, if I didn't mention that already. what I think would even be better is if everybody poured in their oral history to one source of some kind and then have a collection of it. I don't think I have the time to do that, but I would like to do some resource or looking up some resource material. And I've already interviewed some people. But in some of the nearby schools, you mentioned Hillside, Southwest Oakland, I believe Joville School, which is no longer there, Southwest Oakland is. The movie man came around it with the old projector, and wouldn't you know, sometimes it would break, you know, the film.
Yep.
And
right,
then
right.
He'd have to rethread it, and of course us kids thought that was great because then we didn't have to study. So the longer it went, the better we liked it.
There you go. You know, Ron, I would encourage you to get a hold of your local historical society and see what they're doing about putting together oral history together, because that's lots of local groups are doing just what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling, Ron. You know, so many of those, the one room schools are pretty much gone now. Well, they are gone. There's no teaching being done in any one room school, I don't think.
Not in a public school.
Not in a public school. Certainly in some private schools, there probably are. There are some historic one room schools that you can visit, though, around the state, and you have information on that in your book, as a matter of fact, which is kind of cool.
Right. In the back, I wanted students and families who were taking a look at my book to be able to find out more once you have your interest peaked. So I do have an appendix in the back of just a small selection, actually, of one-room schoolhouse museums that you can visit. And, of course, the Wisconsin Historical Society has beautiful one-room schoolhouse at Old World, Wisconsin, and one at Stonefield Village in Cassville.
And there are more in the book with a nice little backstories on the ones that are there.
Oh, gosh, and I should for sure mention the one that's on the cover of my book, which is in Neillsville, the Reed School.
Yeah, that's a pretty one. That's a pretty one. The, you know, recess, I was thinking back, the first recess I ever had as a first grader, I didn't get to go out on because the teacher had us print the alphabet. And I
so printed, she didn't let you go off for recess?
Well, I printed the alphabet, and I finished, but then I was done early, and I didn't have anything to do. So I thought, well, I want to use the paper. So I erased it and started drawing pictures and stuff. And so she said, well, no, you had to keep that. So I had to stay in my first recess and do the alphabet. But
isn't that a funny story to tell your family?
Oh, but there were lots of great games. That you play this time of the year, Fox and Geese.
That's the one outside in the snow where you make a wheel with spokes and there's a fox that chases the geese. It's a tag game.
And we had, let's see, we had Kick the Can. Remember that?
Kick the Can I played when I was a kid. Yep, in the neighborhood and there's a can. It's sort of like hide and seek. Mm-hmm. But if you can come up and kick the can before the finder gets you, then you win.
And Annie, we call it Annie I Over.
There are lots of names for that game. And actually, now that I've talked to lots more people, there are different versions than the one I have in the book, too. But it's generally you have some small shed or small building, and the whole school is split up into two teams, and you throw the ball over the shed, and someone catches it and tries to run around the building and try to tag people.
Yeah, if you had to catch the ball, otherwise
right.
You couldn't. You just threw the ball back
right,
over.
Right, right.
And we had a little garage, like a one-car garage.
A little shed, right.
And we played Annie I Over in that. And let's see, Mother May I, that's another game.
Mother May I, and Button, Who's Got the Button? And actually, I've tried several of these games at school, and kids still like to have fun, so they still like playing games.
Well, yeah, and what you had one in there, hide the chalk. What was that one about?
That's just one where you hide something in the room. That's a good inside rainy mm-hmm. day or cold day game. And that's kind of like when you either you clap, somewhat you hide something, and the one person goes to find it, and as they get, it's like hot and cold. As they get warmer, everybody claps louder so they can find where the chalk is.
And that's like
button. Although we don't have chalk. I have dry erase markers, but you can use a dry erase marker now.
And button, who's got the button?
Right. That's the one where you just sit in a little circle and hide. Someone hides a button behind their back, and someone else has to guess who has it by their facial expressions.
So lots of great games. I'm just trying to think of a London Bridge.
You know, London Bridge and Duck, Duck, Goose, kids still like playing those games.
Yeah. They still
do. Yeah, we take two times a year we go out to the Madison School Forest, and there's a huge field, and we have a huge game, 30 kids and parents of Duck Duck Goose, and they just think that's great.
Nancy in Grafton, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hello. I went to school at Johnson School the first four grades, and it was in the town of Cleveland in Marathon County. There were two boys and myself. We were classmates. I think we had about 27 in our whole school. Well, anyway, I remember when we were little kids and the war was going on, we would take the tin can covers and they were all bent up on I don't know who did it with the pliers, but anyhow, we painted the inside of those covers for the soldiers to use as ashtrays in hospitals. And we picked milkweed pods to make life jackets for the sailors. We had a wooden a furnace there that had a big steel or tin jacket around it, and the boys had to carry the wood in for the furnace. And let's see, we had a big snowstorm, and we were in the middle. Our farm was in the middle of 160 acres, so we couldn't get out because we were the last in the section to get our driveway plowed. Mm-hmm. So my dad went he cleaned the barn out in the afternoon with the stone boat. But in the morning, he went and put all fresh straw in there. Then he went and he put the horse blanket in. And then we jumped on top of that, and my dad took us over to school on that stone boat with the horses.
That is a great story.
And, and now we're down here in Ozaukee County, and the house that we live in, that we raised 14 children, was the first St. Paul's Lutheran school here in Grafton. It was all farm fields, and they moved it several blocks across the farm fields over onto a foundation. And I really don't know how old it is, but it's very, very old. Mm-hmm. And so we have, and I was looking at the wooden floors the other day, and I said to my husband, you know, I look at these wooden floors here, and I think of all the children that walked on those floors, and the teacher lived upstairs. So it's quite a history for this old house here.
Oh,
if the walls could talk, right?
It's a wonderful story. And as you were talking about the floors, there was a compound.
Right. There was a compound that they used to sweep in the fall. And lots of people have told me that they remember that smell.
I can remember the smell of that compound.
Right.
It was really
strong as school started.
I can't describe it, but I can tell you right now, if I smelled it, I would know instantly.
You would recognize it right away.
Yeah,
right. That's what I mean about people remembering real vivid senses, tastes and smells and feelings, right?
Thank you very much, Nancy, for calling. I want to give Carolyn a chance to join in from Wisconsin Rapids. Carolyn, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that I went to a public school when I was in kindergarten. I had the privilege of growing up with a grandmother who was a teacher, and she gave me a very solid foundation in reading and math. And so when I went to kindergarten, I actually did quite well. And my mom had thought that I might need to skip a grade. I was reading, I was doing multiplication, even in kindergarten. And the public school that we went to just was not in favor of that. They said, you know, I'll just be at the top of my class, and it was fine. And actually, a similar situation with my older brothers. So my mom decided to take us out of the public school and transferred us to a private school where there was a two-room schoolhouse. And it was first through fourth grade in one classroom and then fifth through eighth in the other. And I was actually able to transition from kindergarten right into first grade because I had those skills. And what you were talking about earlier with, you know, eavesdropping and being able to learn from the older students, I actually had opportunity to tutor a third grader when I was in first grade because I was more advanced with the math than he.
Right. I think those relationships between students of different ages was really important in a one-room school.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Carolyn, for calling. I want to give Pat a quick chance here to join in. Pat, hi.
Hi. Larry, this is somebody who taught at Meyer School, very close to where you went to a rural school. And 1956, and Eleanor Dahl was one of my best mentors.
And
I know.
She was wonderful.
I have been nodding up and down and giggling through everybody's conversation because I remember this so well. But a couple of comments. One is a few years ago, I retired after 45 years of teaching and absolutely felt that my start teaching in a rural school at age 19 set my whole philosophy of education, that children are individuals, and putting them in a group and having only that expectation for them was just kind of not the right way to go. And it has taken me to three different countries and a good number of states, and I'm still living very near Meyer School and Hope School, and really regard that rural school start as just an incredible experience for me.
Oh, that's a great, and you know, Meyer School, we would play Meyer School in softball or football, too, even.
Do you remember who won?
I honestly don't remember who won, but
probably came out about even because teachers were really careful about that kind of thing.
It wasn't. Yeah, there was less intention for it to be too competitive than.
That's right. A couple of things. When somebody was talking about recess, a couple of things came to mind. One was, you know, when you're out there in that rural school, you're totally responsible for those kids. And
I
remember having a kid walk in front of a swing, and that swing, you know, not all the safety stuff that they have now, hit him in the corner just below the eye. And you're
turned into the nurse, right?
Yes. Oh, you're everything. And another, and it turned out all right. I mean, we ended up having to go get stitches, and I called some help from the nearby farm. And another time that they convinced me at age 19, you know, you're ready to do anything, that I needed to go sledding with them at recess, and there's a big hill right behind the school. And they said, as I'm on the sled and beginning to move, they said, okay, now be sure to duck. And I thought, okay, I'll duck. And I went under the farmer's barbed wire fence.
Oh, gosh. Well, you survived and had a wonderfully long career.
Oh, Pat, thank you so much. Here we are. We're out of time, but I appreciate it. And I really appreciate you reminding me of Myers School because it was a really big deal. And I remember we had big lumps in our throat. We're really nervous about playing the kids in Myers School. Well, one of the great things about your book, for those of us who attended schools, Susan, it brings back so many memories.
Right. I'm so glad. That's wonderful.
And for those who have children or grandchildren who have not obviously not experienced it, this is a wonderful book for them. Thank you so much for writing it.
Well, you're welcome. So good to be here today talking and having people share such great memories.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Susan Abspodilli, elementary and middle school teacher for more than 20 years. Daughter of Jerry Apps, author of One Room Schools, Stories from the Days of One Room, One Teacher, Eight Grades. I hope you have a chance to get a look at it because I know you're going to enjoy it. Oh, man. Coming up, we're going to take a look at holiday baking. Baker Paul Novak here to share some great ideas for holiday treats. That's next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.